Hey, this is Kevin from Kevin's Barbecue Joints, and welcome to episode 164 of the Kevin's Barbecue Joints podcast. And I'm excited to bring you my interview with Ben Johnson and Craig Holzer from Woods Chapel Barbecue in Atlanta, Georgia. I've been wanting to talk to them as soon as I saw this open a few months ago because I was curious because they were doing whole hog and they were doing brisket. I knew that they had a pit from JD at Primitive Pits, and I saw their plating, and I saw also that they had salmon on the menu, so I was intrigued by what was going on there. Ben and his wife Jennifer, they're owners in this restaurant as well as other investors, but they also have a number of other great restaurants in the Atlanta area. We talk about that. And Craig, he grew up in Texas. He went to culinary school in Portland, and he's worked at a number of restaurants using live fire, but then he's also worked at Fox Brothers Barbecue, so he cut his chops there. It's a really cool, interesting interview. We get into the history of the location of where the restaurant is and that area itself, and the name itself is deep-rooted in tradition. I just think you're going to love this. Oh, if you are just listening to this on the podcast, head over to youtube.com/kevinsbbqjoints, because at the end of this, there is a complete tour of the restaurant, of the pits, of the food. You're definitely going to want to check that out. And if you're watching on YouTube, stick around for the end. You're going to love that. But I can't thank both of them enough for taking the time. You're going to enjoy this. And if you're digging these, please subscribe. That way you don't miss out on anything. If you're just listening to the podcast, I'd mention there's a YouTube version. Again, at youtube.com/kevinsbbqjoints. I have a website at kevinsbbqjoints.com with links to all the podcasts, all the YouTube stuff, original content, links to barbecue pop-ups in Los Angeles, links to barbecue pop-ups in Texas. And that thing is growing too. I can be found on all social media at Kevin's BBQ Joints. But in the end, thank you so much for listening. Thanks for reaching out. Let me know what you think on these. Hope you guys have a good week. Have a great weekend. If you're just listening to this before the weekend, enjoy. Good morning, guys.
Morning.
How are you guys doing today?
Doing well. Apologize for the chopping in the background.
That's okay. I love when there's real restaurant noises in the background. As long as it's not like a machine in the back doing something that's awful that people, because people do listen to this when they're driving and they're like, what the heck is that?
No grinding.
So how long has Woods Chapel been open?
We opened back in June of this year. So it's only been a few months. We're still getting our feet under us and adjusting to customers and you know, the sort of demands of a new business.
How has the response been?
I think the response has been phenomenal. I think both from the number of people that have come in, as well as sort of the sort of response to the food itself. We've had great feedback on everything. We've gotten even got a couple of really nice reviews that have come out since we've been open. And I don't know, Craig, your experience with folks, you know, in the pits and
I mean, people really seem to like what we're doing, especially once we got the new offset pits in. I think our quality has increased tenfold.
So when you guys first started, that you didn't have those offset in house?
No,
we had an offset that wasn't drawing the way we wanted it to draw, and so, you know, it was right at open, and we decided we needed to swap it out. So we pulled it. You know, had folks at Primitive Pits sort of did a big favor for us and kind of rushed a job to get us the new ones. And so we were able to do our brisket on one of our other smokers, but it's just, you know, gotten that much better now that we have the offsets that we use.
And you have two from JD at Primitive Pits. Are they 1,000 gallons?
Two 500 gallons.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And that's also a nice thing to know that they, because I've talked to JD a number of times, but it's nice to hear it from this side that he helped out in different ways. Like, it actually, he helped out by getting you guys something quickly and also changed how the product is being presented.
Right. You know, we were in a pinch. You know, we needed, you know, it was kind of a 911 call for us to him, and he was fantastic. We really appreciated it.
Yeah, we were cooking everything on an oiler, and we were kind of playing Tetris with how we were trying to get everything loaded and having briskets on all day. So it helped a lot with the spacing of everything. Sure.
Do you guys still have your oiler?
Oh yeah, we use it every day.
That's a nice tool to have.
Oh, it's amazing. I love an oiler.
Let's go back a bit. Craig, well, first, Craig, what's your background?
I'm originally from Texas, from Nederland, which is right outside Beaumont, Texas. Not a lot of great barbecue there growing up, but we had Patillos, which I don't know if you've heard of that before.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just juicy, greasy sausages. And then, you know, my dad and uncle always barbecued, and then I moved to Atlanta when I was 13, went to high school in Gwinnett County, and then went to culinary school in Portland, Oregon.
Oh, wow.
Moved back to Atlanta, and a restaurant I was working at, they had a barbecue pit, and barbecue was on the menu, and that's kind of how the bug, I got started doing that. So I just from there on, every restaurant I worked at pretty much till then had some sort of smoked meat on the menu.
And you made sure that you were the guy that's doing it.
Exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm. I tried to weasel my way into any smokehouse job I could get. So.
Well, that's perfect. So, and how did this come about? Did you guys know each other before?
When I heard about this place, I kind of bugged our executive chef, Todd Ginsberg. I bugged him on Instagram. I'd never met him. I just hounded him on Instagram for weeks until finally he was like, cool, that's me. And I worked at the General Muir for a little under a year. And we hadn't opened Woods yet, so I was kind of getting antsy. So Jonathan Fox from Fox Brothers reached out to me, and I went to work there for about a year. And then once Woods Chapel sort of opened up, I kind of jumped back in and started helping out here.
I remember seeing that you were working at Fox Brothers. I didn't know how that process worked. So working at Fox Brothers, too, that gave you an idea of volume, because they do a pretty good volume.
Oh, yeah. It's bananas how much volume they do. I mean, on the weekends, they'll do 45 to 50 briskets every day. So I definitely learned that a ton about producing a high-quality product, a lot of it at the same time. So that helped a lot in my growth as a pit guy, pit master, whatever you want to call me.
It's also a good thing for you guys, but for the whole project, because it shows that there is a market for what you're putting out.
Absolutely.
Brisket isn't necessarily the go-to item in Atlanta.
Well, it's funny. I think, you know, and maybe Fox Brothers sort of helped start this in Atlanta, is an appreciation for brisket. Mm-hmm. You know, I grew up here in Atlanta, went to school in North Carolina. So, you know, that was always sort of a, you know, barbecue is pork, mm-hmm. You know, beef is not barbecue. And mainly because I've never had good brisket. Mm-hmm. But once you have really good brisket, you understand why people love it so much. Mm-hmm. So that was, you know, a revelation for me. And I'm happy to say that I'm now much more accepting and open to all barbecue than I used to be.
That's nice. See, everyone can get along. We can make this all work.
You just need to experience one another, right?
Exactly. And it's also, I think, too, that a lot of people travel now more, and they've had good, they've gone to Austin for some festival or for something for business, and then, or to Dallas. And then now the barbecue is so pervasive, I think. You can't say that there's a specific type that people only like now. Or there's like a few people that would be like, I don't like beef. It's kind of odd. So what's your background, Ben? You said you went to school in North Carolina.
Went to school in North Carolina to college, and actually was a lawyer originally. Went to practice law for 10, 12 years locally in Atlanta. And then my wife, who was also a lawyer, we met in law school, she wanted to open a restaurant. So she opened our first restaurant about 16 years ago. West Egg Cafe over on the west side of town. And a few years after that, I sort of jumped and joined her after our son was a couple years old. So we had that for, gosh, 8 or 9 years, 10 years before we opened our second place.
What's that jump like to open a restaurant? Like, had you had any background at all? Jen's your wife, right?
Yeah, correct. Jennifer, yeah. My wife and business partner. And there are four of us, our chef partner, Todd Ginsberg, Shelley Sweet is another of our four partners, and then myself and my wife, Jennifer.
Okay, Jennifer.
You know, nobody should do it the way we did it. Yeah, anybody who comes to me for advice, I tell them don't do it the way we did it, because we had little to no, you know, other than, you know, Jen working at the food court in the mall in high school.
You know, which isn't a great way to, like, that's not a great background now.
Cause no, it's... You know, sometimes it's better to be lucky than good. Mm-hmm. And we certainly were very fortunate. I think we picked a part of town that was really underserved at the time. And now it's booming over there.
That helps.
At the time, there really wasn't a lot there. And there's some pent up demand for it. And that really kept us going. And, you know, I guess one of the good things about being a lawyer is you tend to be a quick study. You have to, you know, you can get a new case in, you get a new client in, you've got to get up to speed in a hurry. Yeah, being sort of analytical and a quick study on things.
That makes sense.
You don't make mistakes over and over again for very long. You tend to learn pretty quickly, get your feet under you pretty quickly. And so I think that was a real benefit for us early on. And that and just the support of the community around us.
So then were you thinking, I want to make a restaurant group? And then what was the next restaurant you guys opened after that?
We don't have a plan. We didn't have a plan. We still have, you know, only the basics of a plan. No, there really was no intention to you know, create a group or do additional restaurants. It just sort of came along later on. Actually, our second restaurant is the General Muir, which is over near Emory University, and is sort of inspired by New York Jewish Deli. We make our own pastrami and corned beef, make our own bagels. And originally, the developer over there had approached us about opening a second West Egg. And my wife's family, or her mother, grew up in New York. My brother lives in New York. We'd go up there a lot, and we'd always go and sort of binge on Jewish Deli. You know, just didn't have a lot of that here in Atlanta, and that's something we've always, you know, toyed with the idea of doing. And when the developer came to us and said, we want you to, you know, maybe think about opening a West Egg over here, so we have this other idea, you know, to do this New York Jewish Deli inspired restaurant. And, you know, to their credit, they thought we were kind of crazy, but they took a flyer on us. And, you know, we were independent. We didn't have a big track record other than, you know, 8-9 years at West Egg. So when we did that, that's when we brought in partners. You know, it's hard to sort of grow a restaurant and run a restaurant.
For sure, so no, that makes sense.
Having more people, and we had read an article with or an interview with Todd Ginsberg, and you know, he had mentioned that he grew up in the Northeast, and you know, he really wanted to open a deli one day, and we knew him sort of from a couple of different avenues, but Shelley, who is our fourth partner, had worked for us early on at West Egg right out of college, became a manager there. Then she went off. She really got the restaurant bug. She went off to a big restaurant group in town and worked at several restaurants. One of them, she was the GM, and Todd was the chef at a couple of those places. They were in the same group for a little bit. And so she knew him. We knew him because his son's mother was our son's first grade teacher, and he loved her, and so we sort of knew him. So we sort of got together and got talking with him about, you know, say you want to open a deli, we're kind of thinking of doing that, and we talked for a long time before we sort of cemented things, but that's sort of how the General Muir came to be. And so the four of us partnered up and opened that, and then it was sort of off to the races, and you know, that was sort of an interesting, you know, overlap, because you know, we are doing pastrami over there. So there's a lot of similarities, differences, the similarities too, and sort of the, you know, the trimming of briskets and, you know, smoking, different degree of smoke on it and cook on it. But so it gave us some comfort.
It's not too many steps away from what you're doing now.
Right. It's you know, a little bit different, but yeah, a little bit similar.
Like that being said, like, I want to get to like how Woods Chapel actually happened. Do you think you'll have, and I didn't notice pastrami on the menu. Is that something that eventually you guys will weave in or not?
Probably not. There's no plan to do that. You know, I think, you know, sort of cross our genres a little bit. And, you know, I don't think there's a present plan to do it. Not saying we wouldn't. One thing we've talked about doing is maybe trying to play with some pastramis here on the offset smokers for use over there, and really trying to develop the flavor on them that way a little bit more.
That's
what I play around with first before we bring serve pastrami here at Woods Chapel.
Yeah, that's true. You guys can serve items at the General Muir that are from Woods Chapel. Like even brisket would probably work, because it's different. Do you guys even, do you have brisket just by itself, or is it more, you have more pastrami, more of the smoked meats, smoked cured meats at the General Muir?
At the General Muir, we'll do brisket occasionally, like a dinner, like, you know, holiday dinners or catering, things like that. We'll do a brisket preparation. But the majority, you know, 99.9% of brisket we do is either pastrami or corned beef.
So then how did this come about? Was that something in the back of your mind too? I'd like to, as this kind of monster grew, did you want to open a barbecue place? Is that something that you've always loved, going to barbecue places?
You know, before I was even in the restaurant business, you know, what guy doesn't want to open a barbecue restaurant? You know,
I don't want to know him.
And maybe girls too. You know, I don't know. I can only speak for myself. I don't want to, you know, generalize, but yeah, you know, it's some, you know, always sort of love the idea of doing it, you know, and sort of things get in the way, and you know, that's. But then it sort of came around full circle, and it is something that, you know, I've talked about doing. It's something that Todd Ginsberg was interested in doing. And so the timing worked, the location worked, and when we first saw the buildings down here, the roof was collapsed in here, It was an old brick building. It was, you know, it was really a mess, but you know, we sort of looked at it and said, you know, it kind of looks like a barbecue joint. So we didn't necessarily look down here with the idea that we're trying to find a place to do barbecue. Part of it was a little more organic, was, you know, here's the space, here's an idea we've been toying around with. They sort of happened to mesh, you know, at the right time.
Is this area that you guys are in, is it a newer, like an up-and-coming area in Atlanta? Like a different, like it's, from what I was reading, I couldn't tell, like it seemed like there's some new developments in that area.
It's a really fascinating neighborhood. It's called Summerhill, and it is south of downtown Atlanta. It is a really old historic neighborhood. It was settled in 1865, right after the Civil War.
Wow.
And, you know, set by formerly enslaved and a lot of immigrants. And it was really part of a really vibrant downtown residential and commercial area. Over time, it sort of deteriorated a little bit economically. When the interstates were built, they put the interstates basically right through the neighborhood. I-75/85, the connector north-south, and then I-20 east-west, basically cut the neighborhood off from downtown and a lot of surrounding areas. So that was sort of the first step. And then for urban renewal plans in the 60s, they decided, let's get a stadium here and lure a Major League Baseball team down here. And, you know, and here's a place that, you know, we can bulldoze a lot of houses and build a stadium and parking lots. And so, you know, the stadium was built, parking lot, acres and acres, you know, just the whole neighborhood was, half the neighborhood was basically razed.
Wow.
Then the Olympics came in 96, and the second, the Olympic Stadium was built. So this was actually the site of the 96 Olympics. And then it turned over to the Braves. After the Olympics were over, they tore down their old stadium and moved into the Olympic Stadium. Fast forward, the Braves, since 2016, moved up to the suburbs.
Yeah, Braves, I thought they moved.
Being downtown. And so we have this huge expanse of parking lots, this, you know, phenomenal stadium that's not that old, and Georgia State University, which has been growing like crazy, which I think believe is the, by enrollment, the largest state or largest university in the state, has always been a very urban downtown oriented university and has done phenomenal things downtown in terms of bringing a lot of life to downtown. They bought the stadium, and so now it's their football stadium. They are partnering with developers, Carter and others, who are basically going to redevelop all of the acres and acres of parking lots that disconnect the neighborhood from downtown into mixed-use developments. But the first thing is there's this row of old storefronts here on Georgia Avenue that's right next to the stadium that have been abandoned for a long time. One of the buildings we went in had a tree growing inside the building, out the wall and up, and nothing, the tree must have been, you know, 30 or 40 years old. So
amazing.
Nothing's happened in these buildings. I think during the Olympics, they used them, you know, maybe for some VIP suite, you know, they might have used them temporarily and then boarded them back up. And so we've got a row that used to be a really vibrant commercial row of storefronts that was abandoned. And so the first step in the development was to rehab a lot of these buildings, fill in a couple of the holes, and that's when we saw it, was when they were still boarded up and the roof was collapsed. And so it's turned into a really, you know, it's up and coming again. You know, it's both historic and a lot of new activity that's coming in. So it's a really vibrant area. The longtime residents are fantastic. You know, they've been patient through a lot. You know, a lot of promises and a lot of disappointment, and so, you know, we're just sort of honored to be here and to be a part of the community down here.
Thank you for that little bit of history. No, that's interesting. I was curious, and from reading and things online, I'm in Los Angeles and trying to glean what's going on right there. Now I understand. It makes a lot of sense. Or is it walkable for people too?
It's really close to Grant Park, which is one of the oldest parks in town. It's a great old Victorian era neighborhood. It's basically right next door to it. It's not really super walkable from downtown. You know, honestly, it's a mile and a half. It's not a pleasant walk right now because it's a big, busy road built to haul cars in and out of the stadium, and it's through basically empty parking lots. But that will change over time, and that's our hope, is that it becomes a walkable, connected neighborhood again. We get a lot of foot traffic now from neighbors up and down the street. There's an ice cream store, a coffee shop and bakery, a brewery, some other restaurants are in the process of opening.
That's perfect.
It's next door. So it's developing a lot of foot traffic now that it didn't have, even 4 or 5, 6 months ago.
Craig knows, it doesn't need to be walkable for barbecue. Like, that's not, people will go, they'll drive to the middle of nowhere for barbecue.
That was part of our thought was, this would be a great spot for barbecue is, we thought it might take a little ramp up time for people to find us down here, to find the neighborhood, because there hasn't been commercial development here in so long. And most people's experience with the neighborhood, if they didn't live here, is parking for Braves games. And so we thought it would take a while. People will travel for barbecue. So it will draw people until we sort of get enough people living here who want this. And, actually the opposite, has been true, but the response has been great, even from the start. So the ramp up, the sort of slow build that we thought we would have to contend with, really has been, we've been fortunate that it's been a pretty strong response from out of the gate.
Wow. Well, let's talk about the restaurant itself. Well, really quickly, the name came from what?
Right after the neighborhood was settled and, right after the Civil War, there were a couple of early churches that opened down here. One of them was named Woods Chapel. It's no longer here. It's no longer around. And it, similar with the General Mirror and some of our other places, we like names that have some meaning behind them. We wanted, sort of doing research on the history of the neighborhood and learning about it. It just sort of jumped out to us, because our focus here is entirely wood cooking. Mm-hmm. So all our meats are wood. We don't have any gas assist. And so it just sort of dovetailed nicely between the history of the neighborhood and the intention behind the cooking process. And it's also a way that, honestly, that, I like history and, sort of honor the history of the neighborhood and, something that otherwise might be forgotten. As new development comes and new people come in, wanted to have a reminder that there were things here before.
That's important, really important.
And just try to keep that alive and have people ask about the history. We love sort of involving customers in the history of the neighborhood, the history of the name, and we want them to ask those questions, like, where did the name come from?
Yeah, and then they might delve deeper themselves outside once they leave into what this place was. I think that's important. I always felt like people, when you go to cities, things have changed so much that no one knows what it used to look like. Our downtown, like a lot of downtown, a lot of different places, like a place, there could have been 7 stores there that have incomplete families. So what's on your menu? And are you guys open? You guys are open 7 days a week.
7 days a week, yeah.
Yep, 7 days a week. Lunch, dinner. I'll let Craig talk about the meats and.
Let's hear about the meats first, Craig.
Yeah, I mean we have beef brisket, whole hog. We kind of have a lot of different styles on our menu. Just because George is not tied to any style of barbecue, so we have Texas style brisket. I would say like Eastern Carolina whole hog, St. Louis style pork ribs with a nice sweet glaze on top, smoked chicken, and then we have the salmon and our jalapeno Oaxaca cheese sausage.
Wow! Then you guys make that sausage from scratch?
Yes.
Are you making that sausage?
Me and my the smokehouse team, we work on that sausage a lot. Yeah, because it's getting pretty popular. It's a pretty good sausage.
Well, that's a big deal to have scratch made sausage at any restaurant.
For sure. Yeah. It came out of necessity. We have a lot of beef scrap in-house from trimming briskets because we trim our briskets pretty aggressively. So we needed a way to kind of make that scrap into something we could sell and something that was equally as delicious as well.
I noticed that on your menu you can get plates, but then also you can order by the pound, right?
Mm-hmm.
And how did you do that with the whole hog? Are you guys cooking the whole hog on the primitive pits or are you cooking it on
A BQ.
A BQ, grill. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I think part of the idea was, as Craig said, Georgia doesn't have a sort of clearly defined style. So we felt a little license to sort of reach and treat each protein sort of the way we thought best represents it. And part of that is the cook method. So the offsets we have for the brisket, the ribs are on the boiler and sort of the chicken and turkey. But then we wanted to have that true North Carolina style whole hog. So it's a you know, it's a cooker out of North Carolina from BQ. Works great. You know, we got the one with the Turner, you know, so we don't have to have four guys over there lifting hogs and flipping them up.
That is a job. That's crazy.
That's a lifesaver. Yeah. But yeah, the idea was, you know, let's do, you know, pork the best way pork can be done. Let's do brisket the best way brisket can be done, and not try to do everything, you know, through one type of cook.
And you're doing whole hog every day?
Just about, yeah.
That's crazy. That's amazing. There's not a lot of places. I'm creating a list of all the places that do whole hog, so it's nice to have you guys on the list.
Yeah, it definitely keeps things interesting. It's a labor of love, too. I mean, we're constantly throwing logs in the burn barrel and burning down live coals and keeping those temps steady, so... Definitely keeps the job fun for sure.
Yeah, and it definitely it's not just you're not just throwing something on. It's doing a whole hog. It takes dedication, and it also shows that you guys are serious about what you're doing.
Absolutely.
And how do you manage the two shifts? Do you have you have to have two cook shifts because of lunch and dinner, right?
Yeah. So we have someone come in very early in the morning, and they load all of our briskets on for the next day, and then they'll cook ribs and sausage and chicken for the lunch service. And then someone comes in later in the afternoon, and they'll fire more ribs, chicken for dinner, and then they'll cook the brisket and the hog that whole day. Yeah. And then those will rest overnight and then get picked and served for the following day.
I'm sure it's a challenge at times, and also keeping pars and making sure that you're, you know, that's...
Absolutely.
You got to figure out the neighborhood, and you also, it's a brand new place in a brand new area. Like it's, yeah, that's still, I'm sure even though June seemed far away, it wasn't that long ago.
Well, briskets, you know, it's like the same thing we had at the General Mirror with pastrami and with bagels. It's not the kind of thing you can just whip up more. Mm. You know, it's a 24-hour process basically, to, you know, the time you start it to the time you serve it sometimes. And so, you know, we run out of things. It's, you got to, judging the pars is very difficult. And, so that's, people have been patient as we run out, but you know, we get better and better at it. And, you know, as you see the patterns and figure out what your traffic is. And
you think that by now people would understand that that smoking meats takes a long time, but people still get upset when, how could you run out of something?
Yeah, you know, everyone understands until it's them.
Until you've driven an hour and a half for something and you have it in your mind.
Right,
yeah.
Right. They understand, but it doesn't mean they have to like it.
No, I've gotten that way. Like, even for, like, a certain bagel or for something, like, I've driven a long ways, and I'm like, I want it so badly, and then, yeah.
And we don't want to disappoint people. We want to have it. You know, we want to run out. We don't want to carry it over. We want to run out when that last person comes in the door, and we want them to have the last great portion, and then it's done. But, you know, it's an art to figuring that out.
And being a sit-down restaurant with a full menu and having, like, beer and... Like, you have beer and wine?
Beer, wine, like... Full license, yeah.
That's nice too. That's an amazing thing to have with your, because the pairings with barbecue is perfect.
It is, and you know, we've got a huge patio, about 120 seats out there, sort of beer garden style, picnic tables, and so you know, now the weather's finally turned cool for us here. You know, just being able to have a beer out there, we're very family friendly. Got a lot of games, and so you know, parents are here with kids, and it just, you know, yeah, it's nice to. Nice to be able to get a glass of wine or a beer or a cocktail.
Well, for sure. And then I was going to ask about the salmon, but I want to jump to capacity though. What's your inside seating capacity in your outdoors?
About 120 seats outside. We could squeeze more tables in there if we had to. You know, right now it's kind of spread out. Same with inside. We've got about I think it's about 120-ish seats inside. We've got a front dining room. It's got about 75 actual seats in it right now. We could fit more if we wanted to. We got a private dining room that seats about 40 where we're actually sitting right now.
Oh, wow.
So we can do events here, you know, neighborhood meetings.
For the holidays, that'll be great.
And then it also gives us some flex space when it's, you know, we can open the private dining room up to normal seating if it's too hot outside for the patio or raining or too cold.
Oh, that's
good. So it just gives us a little flexibility. And it's sort of a luxury. It's the first restaurant where we've had a little bit extra space, a little elbow room. So. We're not used to it, and so you know, figuring out how to use it, it's been very nice, and it's a real luxury to have some extra square footage.
So if people come in, are there long waits? There wouldn't be right now. I'm sure there could be Friday or Saturday, right?
It varies. You know, we're counter service, so you know, our goal is, you know, once you place your order and sat down, got your drink, you know, the food will come out pretty quickly. So the wait's more on the front end, whereas a you know, full service restaurant, you might have a wait on the front end, then have a wait as you. You know, your order's taken while you wait for your food. So, you know, the line can get a little bit long sometimes. But you know, the goal is to keep it moving as efficiently as we can while taking care of everybody, and then have the food come out fast, so that you know overall the wait time is not bad at all.
So you're saying counter service, like you place your order, then go sit down, kind of? Is that
correct?
Okay. All right. Yeah. It's not like meat market style where you're sliding your tray or okay.
No.
And I think that makes sense for a lot of restaurants to not do it that way. I think it takes a certain type of beast to do it that.
It does. And you know, a lot of our stuff is, you know, just not as conducive to that. Mm-hmm. You know, when you build the kitchen line there to do some of the stuff that we're doing, tortillas and things like that. We wouldn't really be able to. It's possible, but This works really well for us.
So how did salmon come about?
Salmon's probably a General Muir sort of offshoot. We did a you know sort of Jewish Al Kippur salmon there, you know, which is hot smoked salmon that just is, you know, done phenomenally well. People love that. It was sort of a natural to bring that over here, and it also sort of rounds out the menu. One of the, you know, the concerns with the barbecue restaurant is that sort of barbecue veto, the one person in the group who, you know, doesn't want barbecue.
That's true. No, that's true.
Whether they're vegetarian, whether they're a pescatarian, but and just rounding it out and giving some options that are, you know, not beef or pork for folks. And it honestly is delicious. It's
really great.
Yeah. It looks really great. I tell people they should, if they're listening, they should follow you guys on your social media, but on your Instagram, and see some of your platters with the salmon on the plate. It looks beautiful. And it's something like, at first I'm like, what is that? Is that, wait a second there.
It's beautiful. I mean, when it comes out, it's just that sort of lacquered, you know, red.
Yeah, we have a glaze we put on top before we throw it in the smoker. So it gets a nice, sweet, lacquered kind of shellac on it. So it's really nice.
And it gives people a reason to come to you guys multiple times in a week, too.
That's true. Yeah, we want to have a really diverse menu, both on the sides. We've got a lot of unique sandwiches that you know, really non-traditional for a barbecue place. And, yeah, just have enough variety. You know, Wilson Gurley, he's our chef here, is just phenomenal with vegetables. So, you know, we have a Wilson salad of the day on the menu, and he just, you know, finds whatever is fresh and, you know, local, and, you know, whip the salad up for the day. And, you know, to really, you know, treat the entire menu with the same care that we treat the protein.
And then how many sides do you guys have?
Oh, gosh. Let's see. Potato salad. We do a smort. Pork belly. Yeah, the smort.
It's a new thing you guys created.
Pork belly fried rice. We got beans, slaw, mac and cheese, cream corn, and things sort of rotate in and out, Brunswick stew. The other thing that we try to do with the sides is, you know, Atlanta is a really diverse place, and so we try to bring in a lot of other influences, non-barbecue influences, into some of the sides. So the, you know, the cream corn is sort of a Mexican style.
The esquite asada, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Which is delicious.
The belly fried rice, which, you know, is actually really delicious and, you know, unexpected. So things like that, where we try to bring in some other elements, you know, to the barbecue and just round it out.
Well, and also to make it your own, as opposed to being just something else, or just like when you order meats, can you say, I want the fatty, like, or a certain part of the hog?
You can definitely do that with the brisket. You could get lean or fatty. The hog, we kind of just mix together and just chop it all up.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, but if someone wants lean meat or fatty meat on a brisket, we'll give it to them. Okay. Yeah, all they gotta do is ask.
Right.
Sure.
The default is a mix, you know, mix of the two.
Yeah.
Makes sense. I just with a restaurant like yours, I didn't know if that was something, an option. Some restaurants I've gone to, I've asked, and they've just seemed like they're confused, or they don't want to offer that.
Yeah, we try to make everybody happy.
Aim to please.
Yeah.
And then what desserts do you guys have?
Actually, our desserts, it's all pies. We've got a pound cake, but it's pretty much pie. So we have a great pastry chef over at the General Muir, and so she's sort of doing all of our pies now.
Nice.
We'll generally have three or four at a time, like a banana pudding pie. The coconut custard pie is really popular, and then, you know, whatever's in season, we'll have a, you know, a peach pie in the summer, pecan pie when it's appropriate, different fruit pies. So that's sort of our dessert program is pie.
Pie. That's great. No, that's nice. And it also doesn't complicate things, I think. And also you have the banana pudding, but it's in a pie form. It makes
right.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah, you can't not have banana pudding. So
you have to have that. No, I think that's.
You gotta figure out how to make it a pie.
Yeah. There's certain people on Instagram, that's all they post is banana pudding. Yeah. Like. So are you guys enjoying it? Is it fun?
It's been great.
This is a blast, yeah. I mean, I get to do what I love every day and do it the right way, so it's perfect.
And, yeah, I have to say, and, you know, sounds sort of self-interested, but the vibe here is great. You know, it's a fun restaurant, and, you know, I like all our restaurants, like I like all my children.
Yeah.
But, you know, it has a different feel. It's, you know, it's a fun place to be. It's got, you know, space. It's got games. It's got, you know, that smoke. Outside, we've got, you know, sort of our upper patio with the tables, and we've got a gravel patio and Adirondack chairs and cornhole that's right in front of the smokehouse.
So that's cool.
You get a great view of the smokehouse. You get the smokes coming out of there. You know, people are hanging out. It's just a very relaxed, happy, fun feel to it that, you know, I guess somewhat intentional, but you know, you never know how things go.
That's your goal, but yeah, it doesn't always.
Right. That's certainly the goal, but you know, it's been great. And the reception's been great. The neighbors have really embraced us. You know, we just get lots of, you know, fans of our other restaurants who are coming here and just, you know, will pull us aside elsewhere and just rave about it. And it's, you know, it's also bringing people to a part of town that they otherwise hadn't thought to come to.
Now, if someone was coming into town and for business and they're flying into Atlanta, how long would it take them to get to where you're going via Uber or whatever?
Atlanta's probably a lot like LA, and that, you know, that depends on where your business is. Yeah, if you're in Buckhead, it'll take you a little while to get down here.
Yeah.
But if downtown, if, you know, if someone's coming in for like a convention, which a lot of conventions here, a sporting event, we are super close to downtown. You know, if you're staying at a hotel downtown, you know, you can be here 5 minutes, easily.
That's not bad at all.
It's actually on the way to the airport too, so you can hit us up the way.
And that's good.
And you're halfway to the airport already. Right?
If only you could serve barbecue while you're taxiing around your airport, that would be nice.
You know, if the airport wants to, you know, have us do a
barbecue. I'm talking about that guy. I've flown through. I used to fly to North Carolina a lot for business. For the High Point Furniture Market, and we'd always stop. And I think it was Delta, so we'd always stop in Atlanta. And if I had a connecting flight, it had to be an hour and a half different. I had to make it long enough because I've run through the Atlanta airport more times than I can imagine.
It's kind of spread out, so you can you need to leave some room.
It's a big place, yeah. But it's also a big hub, and Atlanta's such a great city.
I love it.
Yeah.
And it's nice, and you guys are a nice addition to it. I'm really happy for you. I'm excited to come visit you. I'm really excited, and I hope that people, by listening to this, understand more about you guys and want to visit.
Well, come on down. Let us know when you're coming. We'll happy to host you.
I'll let you know for sure.
A live podcast from here.
Well, thank you guys so much. And Craig, it's nice to meet you officially.
Absolutely. Yeah. Appreciate it.
Well, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having us.
I appreciate it. And I can't wait. And I wish you so much success.